Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause, that's Bob Mackowitz, and a reminder that every Macko and Cause podcast is brought to you by Jeff Pollock. Yes, that's right, Jeff Pollock, he is our lawyer, he is our sponsor. If you need law help, legal advice of any kind, contact Jeff Pollock at 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. A website you ask, a website you will have, jeffpollock.com, that's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. Hey, Bob, I decided to do the ad read at the top of the pod.
That tells me you have a lot to get to, or you're afraid you're going to forget later.
Yeah, apart from door A, apart from door B.
Sure. Hey, I got a question for you, Matt.
Yeah.
If you were to ever get out of sports radio, what job would you do?
I would probably, good question. I'd probably see about getting into comedy of some sort. You know, probably, and even just like, I'd be very happy just being part of a team. And you know this, like part of a writing team, maybe explore that area more, maybe try to get into voiceover work. I think that would be the first place I would explore.
I'm going to make a suggestion based on my morning walk to get a coffee.
Okay.
Become a dog walker. Because That's the growth industry of the next 10 years.
Everyone has
out and got a dog. The price of dogs has gone through the roof. They've doubled. It's like Toronto real estate. Just after that is Toronto dogs. And eventually, people are going to start going back to work, which means there's going to be a lot of dogs that need exercise that, you know, people didn't have to think about it before. I was thinking, could I start a dog walking college and offer some kind of like, you know, Trump University-esque qualification, you know, certification? You know, you do your 20 hours at Bob's Dog Walking College, and then you're like an official dog walker, and then you can charge a premium. You know, half an hour, $25 a dog, you know, times eight. Let's say you can carry eight dogs. So that's eight. $20,000 a day?
That's about right. Oh, wait, carry the one, $18,500 a day.
Seriously, though, dog walker, man. It's a good gig.
A, you get exercise. All you got to do is be able to handle the dog poop. And I like the dog walking school, because you're right. Then that would put you a head up over everyone else who tries to get it. And, you know, you could, now I'm just imagining Trump singing, "Who let the dogs out? Who? No, this is, that's a horrible Trump impersonation. I was trying to do, this is not rhetorical. Seriously, who let the dogs out? Bet it was the Mexicans. But not at my school. Everyone gets it right."
Yeah, you won me over on that one. It didn't start off so good.
No.
You persevered.
Yeah, I got through it. I went from a D to a C. It's kind of like my math marks.
All right, so I got a bit for us to do. And yeah, it's pretty long and involved one. Plus, I want to talk about signature cookies. Later in the show, we're going to design a signature cookie for each other. Casey Landsberg's daughter, she just started her own bakery or some kind of sweets desserts company called Sweeties, I believe. But anyway, it got me to thinking, we need signature cookies. So we'll get into that. But what do you want to start with, Matt? Dealer's choice. You go for it.
All right, Bob. I accomplished something yesterday that is very difficult and has very little real world practical application.
Okay.
I was driving up to the cottage by myself. I decided to stop at Weber's. And I ate the burger and fries with ketchup while driving. And not only did I not swerve, I didn't spill any ketchup on my shirt. I got to tell you, I was damn impressed with myself, because there is no, and especially when you're on your own and you can be as messy as you want and you don't have to be dainty, not spilling ketchup on your shirt while driving, eating French fries, very difficult to do.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack here. So let's go step by step. How did you dress the burger?
Just cheese and ketchup. They don't have a lot of toppings at Weber's. They don't have lettuce, which I like. And I'm not a big topping guy. I'm there for the burger.
And did you put a lot of ketchup on? Because the amount of ketchup really determines the likelihood of spillage.
Yeah, no, I put the smart amount on. I didn't go nuts, but I was not wanting for ketchup either.
I think that mustard's probably the hardest to spill. Ketchup in the middle. If you would have had relish has runoff, so I think
that's
possible to manage. You could probably have pickles as a bit of a kind of a almost like a break wall at the edges of the burger, but you didn't have pickles, so that's added a risk factor. I think that's great. Did you put the paper or the napkin or anything on your lap, like some kind of serviette?
Well, because I was on my own, I actually tucked a napkin into my shirt, where there's nothing more just emasculating, or just you just feel like such a dummy when nothing makes you feel more like a dummy than having the big napkin unless you're eating lobster. Thankfully, I was driving, so no one could see see that look.
Okay. You tucked a napkin into your shirt when you were driving alone to your cottage where there is no one who could see you.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I didn't want to, I wasn't confident in my ability to not spill ketchup. Okay, I hate it when you're driving up and you spill it.
All right, but wait a second. I get that. But worst case scenario is you do spill ketchup.
Yeah.
Which isn't really the end of the world when you're alone and you're driving to your cottage where you will be alone. You tucked a napkin into your shirt. Who are you, Richie Rich? Were you Little Lord Fauntleroy?
Yep, I was, Bob. Tucked that in right in. Well, Bob, unlike you, you know, I can't spend all the money on the fancy detergents you use to get out tough stains from your shirts.
You've always been super repressed, which is funny for a guy who lives to drink and yell. But in a weird sort of way, you have a kind of a bodily function freakout factor that's higher than most guys, I would say.
Yeah.
You're made very awkward by the fact that we have bodies, and you're mortified by what bodies do, correct?
They're disgusting. And shame on anyone who uses a toilet at a workplace for number two. You need to do that on your own with no one within 8 kilometers of you.
That's good, healthy attitude. So I've always known this about you, Cause, that you're kind of freaked out by stuff, but actually tucking. Okay. One time. All right. Just to take it away from you for a very brief second.
Oh no.
Yeah. Don't worry. I'm sure you'll find a way to claw it back. So Landsberg and I went for a business lunch with a guy who ran a big company. I'm not going to say who, because I don't want to embarrass him, but we were sitting at the table and they brought the menus and the guy tucked in the bib at the lunch table. Now, is that more mortifying than spilling pasta sauce on yourself, though, at a lunch?
Yeah. Yeah, that is, because it says you're not an adult.
It's funny, because when you do it, it's because you're too much of an adult. Were you allowed to touch dirt as a kid? Because some parents don't let their kids touch dirt.
Oh, no. We were all in it, like dirt, mud, all that kind of stuff. The weird thing, Bob, the weird thing is I will pick up food that I've dropped on the ground. I don't have any sort of germ issues. It's just with, you know, a lot of the toilet stuff.
You know, you're just a repressed guy from the upper. Well, you know, you're a rich guy from Etobicoke. You're just, that's you. You're Little Lord Fauntleroy.
But I did once eat a granola bar that we left on the floor at TSN 1050 Studios, left it there for over an hour because Gareth Wheeler didn't think I would eat it. I ate it, didn't care.
I'm not sure the hour matters. If it's just sitting there, you know, unless someone passes by with plutonium rods, I don't think the hour matters. It's as dirty as it's going to be after about 10 seconds.
I think the concern is maybe some, you know, bug or something is going to wander by.
We're going to wind up eating bugs. That shouldn't make a difference. But okay, so
yeah,
I think everyone should be a dog walker.
Yep. You
used a bib in a car by yourself on the way to the cottage, so you didn't spill any ketchup on yourself.
Yes.
And now we're ready to talk sports at 10 minutes in.
There we go.
I want to do a bit called Do We Owe an Apology? I wrote down a list of things, people we've ripped in the past.
Yep.
And they've had a turn of events, and we're going to figure out if we owe them an apology. You ready?
I am. Can I guess two of them that you're going to throw out there?
Sure, of course.
Russell Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony.
Well, not Carmelo, but yes, Russell. We'll get to Westbrook in a second, but I want to start with Jack Campbell.
This is
more me than you, but he looked pretty good last night.
Mm-hmm. He did.
And he looked pretty good recently, and he may not be the league's best goalie, but he's playing like someone that you can kind of feel confident about going into the playoffs. So based on how he's played recently, do we owe Jack Campbell an apology?
Absolutely. I think it is funny. They lost last night and his save percentage was under 90 or whatever. But he made some great saves. I'm at the point now where the Leafs' job is to make sure Freddie Anderson is physically and mentally ready to be the number two goalie when the playoffs start.
It's hard to imagine Freddie would come back and take the net over immediately unless there's some kind of skid happening. But I suggested that the Leafs goaltending situation potentially could be the biggest crisis they've faced in a generation. And then Jack Campbell started to look like a guy who was going to make that come true. But, you know, a couple of David Rittich starts, and then next thing you know, they put Campbell back in, and he looks pretty good. He seems to have righted himself. So for that, do we owe an apology?
Listen, we were skeptical because just not a lot of games played for him. So I understand the skepticism. What I wouldn't understand if people are still skeptical. Jack Campbell's passed every test that you want to pass. He deserves to start in the playoffs. And more than that, he deserves your confidence. Now, he'll still have a leash on him, as he should, especially if Freddie's 100% back and healthy. There should be some sort of leash. But I feel comfortable and confident with Jack in the playoffs.
So you've really nailed it there. In order to deserve the apology, we have to express confidence. Because what we were saying is we don't have confidence in this guy. Not that we don't like him. Not that we don't pull for him. But the question was, do you think he can go four rounds of the playoffs? Which is what the Leafs need in a goaltender. I'm not prepared to apologize for that. I think we need to see him in the playoffs before we owe an apology.
Okay, that's fair.
You know, last night, the Leafs lost to Montreal in a playoff-style game. And, you know, I'm not in a hurry to play Montreal in the playoffs, are you? They play a close-checking, congested-up, not-so-fun game that the Leafs could struggle with if the goaltender on the other side is great and our goaltender isn't.
I'm the only fear I have. It's not as much about their style, because if not for some horrible overpassing by Matthews and Marner, the Leafs win last night. My concern is if Carey Price comes back and is full price, because a full hardcore, and who knows, at that age, a lot of injuries, I don't know if that's possible, but that's the thing that scares me, because it's the whole goalie thing. Beyond that, if Price is just fine, I think Toronto wins. I think Toronto beats Montreal in five.
Do you remember in Spaceballs when they have the big climactic scene and, you know, Dark Helmet and, I can't remember the name of the protagonist. But
Bill Pullman, Lone Star.
Lone Star, thank you. And they get the lightsabers up, right? And
yes.
Rick Moranis' Dark Helmet says, "I see your Schwartz is bigger than mine." I want to see Jack Campbell have a bigger Schwartz than somebody before I give an apology.
What if their Schwartz is the same size?
Well, then it comes down to technique.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking of that Tony Little. Technique!
Okay, shall we move off of this for the sake of everyone?
Yes, we should. By the way, the one other thing, Bob, you never have to ask the question, Matt, do you remember in Spaceballs? The answer is yes. Yes, I do remember. Whatever the moment is, I remember.
I think Spaceballs is underrated in a lot of ways as a cult movie. Is it a cult movie or is it an A-minus hit movie?
If you were born, like, say, from 1968 to 1979, there's like a 13-year window.
Are you there, Cause? I lost you there big time, buddy.
Yep. No, I lost you there as well. But that's it. That's easy. We pulled it back. So again, love Spaceballs. What did you want to move on to next?
Okay. So do we owe an apology to Pascal Siakam, who had 39 the other night?
No, we don't owe an apology to Pascal Siakam. And listen, he was great last night. And all the explanations for why he's regressed, even though the stats look good, are all fair. Being in Tampa, COVID, weight loss, all that sort of stuff is there. And it's all fair. But he's in that realm of he's being paid as a superstar player. There are certain levels of expectations. He hasn't been consistent. And my big question is, can we see Siakam at his best while OG Anunoby is also out there and also being truly effective? Because that Siakam game, that was a Kyle Lowry Siakam masterpiece. It was a great game. I loved it, but I still have questions.
So I'm going to say we do, and here's why.
Yeah.
All the things that you listed are incredibly good reasons why someone would underperform on the basketball court.
Of course.
The guy had COVID. They're stuck in the middle of nowhere playing in an empty arena. The whole team is underperformed. The whole team has been bizarre. The going back to the bubble, Pascal didn't look great. And if he'd been better, you know, I feel like we still have bubble hangover with him because we remember how, you know, if he's even pretty good, I think we'd beat Boston. But that's not this year. That's last year. You got to move on from that. If we're willing to separate those two, I don't think his year this year has been a disaster. People talk about him like he's a lodestone. I don't think that's true.
Well, no. I don't think that's true as well, but there's just too many stretches where they're just the inconsistency. Like before that Laker game, the two games previous, he went 71 minutes without a free throw attempt. 71 minutes. I see too many stretches where he should be the best player on the floor, where he, you know, is the most physically gifted player out there, and he just disappears. I don't think he's a lodestone. I still have faith that he can turn it around, but I am disappointed. Now, I'm like, put it this way. If there was no such thing as COVID and he was putting up this sort of performance, I would look to trade him. I would never do that because you still have the context of COVID. So I'm still willing to give the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, I'm disappointed with his year.
Okay, so once upon a time, I bought a stock through your family's brokerage.
Mm-hmm.
I bought some XM. And I bought it for something like $8 a share.
Yeah,
however much, you know, not a ton, like a couple thousand bucks worth, right? And at one point it went up to 40. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Stocks are fun. And I called up Scott and I asked him, I said, do you think I should sell it? And he goes, you know what, stock's going pretty good. I think you should hang on to it. And it turns out that 40 was the highest it went, and it went down to about mid-20s. And it right. left and it stayed there. And I wound up selling it because we needed the money for something else. And we're not rich people. You know, we can't sit around with stocks. So we sold it. And I was disappointed. And not in Scott, in the stock market, I should be clear. And I thought, you know what? That's stupid in a way. Because I bought it for $8 and I sold it for like $25. I tripled my money. That's amazing. That's incredible. I'm not a financial guy. I should be dancing in the street. But I could have done five times. And so instead of thinking about the two X factor that I gained, I thought about the two X factor that I lost. And that's Pascal Siakam in a nutshell. Late first round draft pick, found money, incredible story. This is like one of the great Raptors success stories in franchise history. And for a while there, it looked like he could be a top 10 player in the NBA. We were so primed for that. He's not. Maybe he's top 25, top 30. That's an amazing success story that we feel ripped off by because it looked like it was going to be amazing and it turned out to just be very good. So I'm apologizing to Pascal Siakam because when we dump on him, it's because he didn't turn into, it's because he's not Ben Simmons or Jason Tatum. Okay, great. He was drafted, what, 26th overall, 29th overall? He's better than he has any right to be. I'm standing up for him.
I love it. The stock market one is a great analogy. And where this leads to is one of the eternal questions that I love to talk about every 6 or 7 months. How much more would we enjoy sports if we didn't know how much a player made and the salary cap conversation was just one that wasn't part of our day-to-day sports life?
It's a great point because even when you were saying what we don't like, it's he's paid as a franchise player. In a cap universe, you can't ignore it because it's not just what he gives you on the court. It's what his salary takes away from what else you could have. And you're right. When we were kids, we grew up watching hockey. I didn't know how much anyone made. I didn't know. I assumed they were all super rich. They play hockey for a living.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, like the
guys had to work at like, you know, grocery markets in the off season to supplement their income. I didn't know that. I was a kid.
It wasn't part of it. Big part of it because we didn't have 24-hour sports. So, you know, the sports that were out there was focused on the games and things like that and trades. And it wasn't in the minutiae of everything else because no one needed to fill 24 hours of sports content. I mean, that's part of the problem is sometimes we know too much. I was hearing about Michael Lewis's new book. I think it's called The Losers or something. It's something to do with, I think it was like Bob Dole's campaign, whatever. But the point is we always talk about how we're much more of a divided as a culture. And the problem is we just know too much about everyone. You know, we know too much. If you only know a little bit about everyone, you're not going to hate them or love them. They're just mysteries. And it's the same thing here in sports. Sometimes if we know too much, then we're going to irrationally maybe not like a player or a team or a coach.
It's a great point. I never thought of it that way. But knowing the more you know about something, the more likely you are to be disappointed in it.
Yeah.
Of like moral entropy. All things gravitate towards chaos. You know, as good as something looks, it can never be as good as you think. The other day I was on a phone call and Martin Luther King's name came up and someone says, oh, that guy cheated on his wife. Oh, is that what he's known for?
But that's part of the story. And yeah, again, sometimes and no, of course not. Ye Lord. But it's sometimes it's I think maybe sometimes it's better. We just don't know that much, you know, a lot about your small circle of friends and your family. And beyond that, just keep moving. If someone throws something on Twitter that you disagree with or the Raiders tweet something or this or that, just move on. Just, you know, move on. But, you know, we get sucked into it. The same thing with Siakam. If we just focused on what he was, where he was drafted, what he's become, it's a hell of a story. It's too bad we can't just leave it at that.
All right. So talking about things that the more we know about, the less we like. Let's get to Russell Westbrook here because he put up, what was it, 24 assists, 21 rebounds or the other way around the other night?
21 rebounds, 24 assists, I think like 17 points. Washington beat Indiana. They now have a three-game lead over the Raptors for the 10th spot.
I thought they were going to be better, but it looks like they're going to make the play-in game. And Russell Westbrook is doing things that almost nobody has ever done. Scott Brooks came out and said that he thinks he's the second greatest point guard of all time, just behind Magic Johnson. Not too sure about that, but it is a hell of an accomplishment and a hell of a season. All right, do we owe Russell Westbrook an apology?
No, 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 no. Russell Westbrook has single-handedly made the triple-double uncool. When Oscar Robertson, we're like, look at that. Now we're like, all right. And listen, it's not to take away from the man's work ethic, the man's drive, the man's fearlessness, his physicality. Like, there's so much to admire about him, but there's always the, well, why doesn't your teams do more winning? Why do not more stars want to come and be with you? Why is it that a couple times your team's been the favorite and then got bounced in the first round? And of course, it's not all on you, but it's more on you than in other sports because of the nature of basketball. I'm damn impressed with the numbers, but there's still the context of just overall team winning. So no, I don't apologize to Westbrook, who should go in the Hall of Fame. Absolutely a Hall of Fame player, a remarkable career, but like second overall point guard or even top 20 player of all time. Get out of here.
So I love the story going back to, we've talked about this on the pod before, but Ian Tulloch, who was with The Athletic, and I guess he's with Maple Leafs Hot Stove now.
Yep.
And he wrote an article about Freddie Gauthier was having a surprisingly and kind of under the radar good year. And he had a whole bunch of stats and he explained why Freddie Gauthier was doing great. And Jeff O'Neill went ballistic when he saw this on the air because Freddie at that point had zero goals.
Yep.
Zero goals. And he goes essentially, some guy in graph or something. And to me, I thought this was a fascinating argument because it didn't mean that Tulloch's argument was wrong. It could be that Freddie Gauthier was contributing in ways that, you know, the eye didn't necessarily see. And he was making the Leafs a better team. So maybe he was right. On the other hand, though, Jeff's got a point. When you've got zero goals and you're a first-round draft pick, can you really be having an underrated year?
No.
So this is my point about how numbers tell the truth and they lie at the same time, depending on what you've decided is important. I don't really understand. I'll make a confession to you, Matt. I understand why plus-minus is a stat that's lost its luster. I get that. I think that people have written off the RBI too quickly. It's still about cashing in runs, isn't it? I realize that there are ways that you can inflate it, that, you know, maybe it's not the be-all, end-all of numbers, but it's like, did we write off the RBI too fast? Do we owe it an apology?
I think we do. And yes, when you see someone with a ton of it, you have to put in context how many opportunities did they have to cash in runs? How good were the teammates in front of said hitter? Yes, I get it. But at the same point, I'm not a fan of when we just throw away some of these statistics because we feel like we have something better.
I got to tell you, Matt, I don't want to be the Luddite who doesn't believe in the new science, but I just can't talk about bat, you know, ball trajectory and speed off the bat. Like when someone says, oh, Vladdy hit it and it was 104, you know, kilometers an hour or whatever it is off the bat, that means nothing to me. Like relative to what? Relative to what? There's so many stats that get thrown around and I know they're impressive, but it's not like it used to be with home runs. And I'm not trying to be that guy. And I know I sound like the get off my lawn guy.
Don't be that guy. It's fine.
All right, great. I used to know that 30 home runs was way better than 20.
Yep. Let me check the math. Yep, checks out.
You know, I used to know that batting 300 was way better than batting 260. I don't know what bat trajectory is good. And I don't care. You know what I mean? And BABIP and this and that. Like baseball has become almost impossible to watch because unless you have a freaking engineering degree, how could you know if anything's good? Why can't I just go back to the RBI? It's like, oh, he went to bat. And when he was done, someone scored. Oh, that's good.
Well, the problem is where those stats started to jump the shark is when someone was claiming, and again, it wasn't like mainstream or a lot of people, but then people were looking at some of Tony Gwynn had some of the worst exit velocity with his hits. And people were wondering, was he at all lucky? And it's like, okay, that's it. Shut her down.
Was Tony lucky for 12 consecutive seasons?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and then what stats did to leading to shifts and pitchers go five innings. And you know, I watched last night when Kevin Biggio was at the plate and there was like 17 infielders and outfielders all congregating between first and second base. I'm like, that's not baseball. And by the way, I don't mind going get off of my lawn. Why should everything be tailor-made to the 23-year-olds? Hey, 23-year-olds, sometimes you got to shut up and grind. All right, maybe that's a little too far. What does this have to do with Russell Westbrook?
Well, it goes, Sorry, we have to bring it back. because the triple-double when we were growing up was a massive accomplishment.
Yeah.
And your whole point started with that he has devalued the triple-double, and I can't help but agree with you. You know what had happened for me? Geez, what the hell was his name from the Cleveland Cavaliers? It was Ricky Davis.
Yeah.
When he gave himself the triple-double by throwing the ball off the backboard so he could score in the last 10 seconds of a blowout, it counted as a rebound. He could have just dribbled it out, but he threw the ball off the backboard, caught it himself so that he could have a triple-double.
The equivalent of that, Bob, is you'll see where teammates of Russell Westbrook over the years, it's a kind of a hidden agreement. If it's an easy defensive rebound, let Russell get it. It's the equivalent of when CP3PO says, let the Wookiee win.
It's like Holt. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly it, Matt. So, no, we don't owe Russell Westbrook an apology. Since we're talking about baseball, though, even though we probably shouldn't have been, but I dragged it there. The Blue Jays pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
Do we owe them an apology?
They've been better than we expected. When you look at their team ERA, it's been pretty remarkable when you consider all the injuries.
I think we do, but most things in baseball, because it's 162 games, it might not last. You know, there's a lot of things that happen over the course of 162. But remember, I'm the guy who said I was only going to watch one game out of five so I could see Ryu pitch and not anybody else.
Yep, but Robbie Ray's been good.
Yeah, he's, you know, Steven Matz, even though he's cooled off, obviously he had a good start, and the bullpen's been terrific, and there have been surprise arms. No, they've been really exciting and good. And the funny thing, as you've pointed out many times, how disappointing so many guys across the offense have been.
And they're starting to warm up, but then, like, now Springer is hurt. But it's been nice to see Teoscar Hernandez, who had another good game last night. And by the way, I'll give Matt's I'll give him a break last night. The three run, and I'm hanging out at the cottage, so I'm up late watching baseball. It's what you do. But the three runs Oakland scored in the third inning, a lot of that was Kevin Biggio misplaying a fly ball out to right. But yeah, the offense or excuse me, the defense has been better to start and the offense hasn't been as good to start.
I'll tell you, when I checked out of the game the other night, I flipped it on, and you know, you're flipping between many options. I flipped it on, and Buck and Tabby were talking about they had a board with three different pictures of Danny Jansen and different glasses he was wearing.
Oh, here. Yeah.
And I thought, well, we're at this point in his career. Click. I just moved on.
And to be fair to you, Bob, it's already past 10 o'clock. Like, you know, so it's not early.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're out in Oakland, and I'm not going to hunker down and watch this thing till 1:30. There's no way.
No.
So we all agree. We owe, we'll call it a conditional apology to the Blue Jays staff. Here's an interesting one for you. Draymond Green. The Warriors are having a kind of a weird year, but they lost Wiseman. They obviously don't have Klay Thompson. There's any number of reasons that they could fall apart, but Steph has been superhuman. And then quietly, Draymond Green is still good. And you and I have talked in the past about how he's been overrated for years, but did we try to properly rate him so harshly that we forgot that he's actually still good?
I think with Draymond Green, what gets people a little bit upset is Draymond seems like a guy that when the stakes are high, he'll be better offensively. But when the stakes aren't there, when the team is losing, he kind of loses a bit of interest. His defense goes down a bit. He's hesitant to take shots. But then, like, I watched last night against the Pelicans. There was one play. He drove to the basket, scored on a reverse layup. I'm like, holy shit. Like, that's, you know, the Draymond Green we saw like 3-4 years ago. And listen, Green is such a good team player when he wants to be, but he just has a bit of a checkout factor. And I think that bugs people because he's a damn good player. Like a great player.
Okay. So this is my point. Why I feel like at least I personally owe him an apology. I got so used to seeing this. Draymond Green's not who he used to be that I kind of slept on who he actually still is, which is a really good player. This mm-hmm. happens to the guy sometimes. I did that all year long with John Tavares. John Tavares isn't who he used to be. But then, you know, he kind of pulls it together and you're like, oh, but, you know, he's still really good. Maybe he's not worth $11 million, to your point about knowing how the sausage is made with the money. But, you know, we sometimes, especially with players in their later careers, it's hard for us to think of him as good because we're used to them being great.
I think the only thing about Draymond is just he just goes through these stretches where he's invisible offensively. I think what it comes down to is we feel bad for Steph Curry. He's like leading the. I feel like he's both leading the league in scoring and times he's been triple covered.
I threw out a poll yesterday during his 40 points plus game. More lovable undersized superhero, Spider-Man or Steph Curry?
Ooh, good question.
Thank you. Spider-Man was pulling at 54% last time I checked. Steph Curry 46. I would say that too, just because I don't think that Steph Curry can stick to walls. But other
you
than
don't know that.
Equal. No, I don't know that. And that's why I said I'm pretty sure.
He's Steph Curry, as I've said before, I think we've talked about it. No one in professional sports in North America has a higher Q rating than Steph Curry. But we have talked about that before.
He's so lovable. I've got one more that I don't think you can answer. But
Okay.
Do we owe Ted Lasso an apology?
For being awesome?
Have you seen it?
Season one. I love season one. It's incredible.
Okay, great. So you have seen it. Yeah, it's an amazing show. But didn't you think when you saw it, didn't you roll your eyes and say, this is going to suck? And what the hell are they doing?
Well, yeah, because you saw the first preview for it and it just felt formulaic, fish out of water sort of, you know, sort of show. And then you watch and you go, oh, this is really good. And it I always say one of the hardest things to do is to do a comedy or any sort of show where it's about being good and earnest, and it's not filled with cynicism or anything like that. Like that, optimism done well in movie or TV form is difficult.
People love Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes,
well, that's the greatest show that's ever been made, and I can't disagree that, you know, I mean, the acting's amazing, the writing is hilarious, it's just super smart. But here's my one thing that keeps me from committing to Curb. It is easier if your point of view is everybody sucks to get people on board than to suggest that people are good and to try to get people on board. It's like writing a happy pop tune that isn't sappy. You know, I still think U2's Beautiful Day is one of the great pop songs of all time. because it should suck, but you can't help but go along with it. Pharrell Williams is happy. You know, another song, you hear it and it just lifts your spirits. It is so hard, to your point, to be good and entertaining.
Hey, as well.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's another one. It's why I love the movie Rushmore. I'm so biased about that movie, but at its heart, it is a movie of optimism. It is, it is this sweet movie. It doesn't try to be very dark or anything like that. And yet it still succeeds. And you're right. The easiest thing to do is to be the cynic, to say everything sucks, be suspicious of everyone. Everyone has an ulterior motive. And then you leave it at that. But yeah, absolutely. Like Ted Lasso nails it. The degree of difficulty is a lot higher with that than it is with Curb Your Enthusiasm.
It's what you get from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's what you got from Parks and Rec. These are shows, and going back to shows like Cheers, that are just built on the quality of relationships between the characters. And the characters are people that you root for. And even the ones that you aren't rooting for, you still kind of are, because they've got something lovable about them. That's really, really hard to do. We've talked about this before, but I blame the David Duchovny show Californication with ruining a lot of great writers out there. The first scene is David Duchovny. He plays not a washed up writer, but a guy who's got writer's block. He's had one huge book and, he's in between books. And it's a fantasy sequence where he pulls up and he winds up having sex with a hot nun. And it's the opening scene. And it's intended to be like, whoa, this is the craziest thing ever. And so many guys saw that and said, wow, I have a permission to male fantasize all over this. And they forgot that the whole point of a show is not to enact your fantasies, but to show people relating to each other in a meaningful way. I think Californication ruined a lot of potentially great writers.
I've never seen it, but yeah, your point makes a ton of sense. And also the whole hot nun thing. I don't know. It doesn't really do it for me.
Okay, so hot nuns I don't get. Scary clowns I kind of get, but I don't think they're that scary. Some of the scary ones are, but not just any clown. What are some tropes that don't work for you?
By the way, the clown one, yeah, I agree. I feel bad for clowns. Like just somewhere we all agreed they're the worst things on the planet. And it's just, it's really not fair.
To dentist, but like a dentist goes into your mouth and rips out your teeth with pliers, and a clown makes dog balloons.
Exactly. People that have cats are crazy. I don't know. It's people looking after animals. How about that?
I don't know what makes a cat person more crazy than a dog person. I was watching some woman today while I was getting my coffee talk to her dog. And she was speaking to it like it was a child. The dog is not a child. That was weird.
But you know what it is? It's because I think it's the introvert extrovert thing. If you have dogs, you have to be outside with other humans in sunshine. If you've got cats, you could be locked up in your lair if you want.
That's actually a great point. I've never thought about it, but a dog is an outside animal and a cat is an inside animal.
Yeah, it's my only theory.
No, that's a really good one. I don't have any more do we owe apologies to, but I do want to do signature cookies.
Let's do it.
Before we wrap up. Okay, so Casey Landsberg, Michael's daughter, started a cookie making business. I sent him a text, just said, give me the information on it and we'll plug her business. And he just sent me back a text. One word. You know what it said? Bobby!
God. You two are so meant for each other in terms of your text communication abilities. My God, you're meant for each other.
Well, of course, I didn't get back to him to follow up, right?
Yeah, of course. Hey, I'm going to give a little testimonial for Casey Landsberg. Some of them were delivered. A mutual friend bought some cookies for Amy, Christy, and I. They are delicious. I gave some to my nephews. Did I eat three of them on the drive up from the cottage from my home to Weber's? Yes, I did. Did I feel shame? Maybe a little. But these are and like, think about Casey. She's been doing this for years. Damn, is she good when it comes to baking?
Okay, cool. Well, I was going to throw this out to you. I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but I think that we should just let her sponsor the pod, but not owe us anything except maybe some cookies every once in a while. Like, can she pay us in under the table cookies and become a sponsor of Macko and Cause?
I say you should reach out to Michael about that. And in 17 weeks from now, maybe we'll be onto something.
Okay, I'll send him a text, and yeah. he'll get back to me in 4 days, and it'll say, Bobby!
Yeah, once you could send him a direct message from our Instagram account as well.
I'm on it. Writing it down on my to-do list. All right, hey. Why don't you go first? So we wanted to create signature cookies for each other.
Okay, so for me, Bob, my cookie for you, I'm still working some of the final details, but the base of it is this is going to be just like very Eastern European. I want this as a cookie. Like, you know how there's like heavy donuts and light donuts? I want this to be a heavy cookie. I want this one to be like churned with like really old world cream is going to be, and just like thick butters is going to be used into this cookie. I want this to be a cookie that not only is impressive with depth, but at the end, it's you're going to feel a little regret and shame and question why you did it. I want this to be a cookie that as you bite into it, you're conflicted. It's really good, but is this the right thing for me?
Okay, so a butter-based cookie. I'm going to make a suggestion if you want it to be Eastern European. Mm-hmm. Involve plum in the recipe somehow, because nothing says that Eastern European was involved quite like plum.
Yeah. Can I get some dates in there as well? I feel a date would somehow be involved.
Dates more Middle Eastern, I would say.
Okay. Bad dates.
Yeah, bad dates, exactly. Okay, for cause, I was thinking for you, mm-hmm. it's got to be decorative because you like things to be special.
Yep.
And so I was thinking you also like them to be light, though. And there should be something festive about it. So I was thinking a shortbread, like a Christmas kind of shortbread, but maybe like a snowman and then dressed up like a snowman, but with like short, spiky blonde hair. Mm-hmm. And then for eyes, you know, those little silver balls that when you're a kid, you think should taste delicious, but they're just kind of hard and they're
yes. not,
right. But they look good.
Yes.
I think those should be the buttons.
Yep. No, I love it. Love it. Love Christmas.
Snowman with golden or with silver ball buttons.
Yeah. And by the way, Bob, you nailed it on the silver ball buttons. A button like they'd be part of the different sprinkle package when you made homemade cake or cookies or something. And there was nothing delightful about them.
It's such a letdown because you think, oh, Jesus, like this icing is amazing. And oh, sometimes you can put a Smartie on something and that's pretty great. Or a cinnamon heart. Like, oh, my God. It's actual silver balls. That should be the crowning glory. It's not. It's like chewing a... So there it is. Let's reach out to Casey via Michael, and we'll see how we do with our signature cookies.
I can't wait for this to get started in Labor Day.
If this happens, I'll post it on our Instagram, okay?
How about I post it on my own personal one so it could get some attention, just like yours? And by the way, Bob... I do know what flinty means.
Okay, so we should probably explain to people. Matt sends out really douchey pictures of wine in his exotic locales, and I always send proletariat criticisms in the comments, right? So you said that some wine had flinty almond taste.
Yeah.
And I wrote, I think you don't even know what flinty means. Use it in a sentence that doesn't involve wine.
And I did. I said flinty is a time in a young man's life when his body starts to undergo changes.
To which I responded, sounds like a great wine.
It was a really good Riesling, Bob. It was a really good Riesling.
Ah, Lordy. Okay, so we're wrapping up now. It feels like we're at the 47-minute mark. We should talk about the Marvel trailer that just came out. Did you get a chance to see it? I sent it to you.
I watched it.
Yeah. All right, so what are your thoughts?
And this was just because there's so many different Marvel trailers. This is the one where it was a theme about family, and it showed shots of all these past movies. Yeah. And it sort of gave you a quick hitter about what's to come over the next 2.5 years. And the main thing, I mean, obviously, you know, that's my jam, and it's so stupid. You're seeing all these great moments and you're getting a little choked up by it. But the main thing I loved was at the end when it says, we'll see you at the movies. It reminded me of Siskel and Ebert, and that was the thing I loved the most, because to me, going to the movies is going to represent some level of normalcy. So that's what I loved the most out of all of it.
when I watched it, I thought this was made for Cause and not made for me, because yep. it hit on all of your favorite themes. It was about a minute and a half of movies that you've already enjoyed and you like to be reminded of that.
Yep.
And then it was a kind of a almost promise of future nostalgia, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It's like
everything you've always loved will never go away. And that's you.
I loved it.
Everything you love, you want to never go away, whether it's a bottle of wine or football, you know, football on the island doing your picks at the beginning of the year. What do you guys call it? The Ditka?
The Ditka, yeah, our fantasy football weekend.
Right? You know, all of these things. You're a traditionalist this way. You know, for me, I looked at it and I thought, you know, they're obviously always well cut and, you know, there's some decent storytelling. But what really jumped out to me is I don't feel any particular excitement about any of the movies coming up.
I agree. Well, there's none that really, I mean, the next Guardians of the Galaxy and Doctor Strange, there's things here or there, but no, you're right. There was none that said, I can't wait to watch this. I just can't wait to go to the movies again. And when they show you the full trailers and previews, there are some, Bob, that are going to, they're going to ensnare you. You know, they are.
Okay. Of course they are. So look, ask me which Marvel movies I've enjoyed.
Which Marvel movies have you enjoyed?
All of them. Every single one. Because they're Marvel movies. You know, they're superheroes come to life. It's amazing. But the Black Widow movie,
meh.
I could see it or not. Shang-Chi looks good. I'm pretty excited about that. I'm not sure what to think about Eternals. I didn't think Guardians of the Galaxy would be good, but I was wrong. It was actually really good. And I'm kind of hoping that happens here because something feels off and I can't explain what. But it feels like it could either be really, really good or a bit of a creative dead end. Yeah, I remember watching the Tom Cruise reboot of the Mummy, and it was going to be the beginning of the Dark Universe thing for it. Just like you could just feel it just didn't work, and it was over before it even started. And I hope that doesn't happen with Eternals, but
I'm gonna
about it. The one that I'm really excited about is the new Spider-Man movie that's coming out around Christmas. That has the potential to be amazing.
Are they bringing all three Spider-Mans back? Did I hear that right?
Well, it's supposed to, I mean, this is what everyone's discussing. Yes. And Otto Octavius is going to be played by Alfred Molina, and Jamie Foxx is going to be Electro. So they're tapping into that Sony IP, and basically kind of like they teased with Evan Peters as Quicksilver in WandaVision. They're using the fact that there are different cinematic universes to imply that there is a multiverse. So the Spider-Man that you met in Sony, you can now suddenly meet in Marvel.
Right. Okay.
And they're all really Spider-Men, but they're Spider-Men from different universes. So the multiverse is obviously going to be at the driving, you know, in the way that Thanos and the sort of Infinity Gambit that he had was the driving force behind the Avengers. Clearly, there's going to be some big bad that's tied into the multiverse.
I got to tell you, Bob, we might never have sounded nerdier than the last 2 minutes. I feel we need to talk about old stories of nailing ladies, or did you see that goal line stand the other night?
Dick Butkus.
Oh, yeah. Dick Butkus and Gale Sayers. Get it done. Actually, they never got it done. They never made the playoffs, but that's for another day.
So the Midway, purple people eaters. Any other 70s football references you want to make?
Bob, you missed the Steel Curtain. Come on.
Oh, yeah, Steel Curtain's a good one. Kenny the Snake Stabler.
Oh, there we go. Going deep to Fred Biletnikoff, who just got off the sideline smoking a heater and then comes on the field to catch a touchdown pass.
Has anyone ever caught a pass or scored a goal with a cigarette in their mouth?
I feel Gordie Howe did.
Is there somewhere there must be archive footage from the late 60s of guys drinking beer out of stubby bottles on the bench?
Oh, yeah. Well, you wonder why no one played defense back then. They're all sitting there drinking stubbies.
You know, I feel like we need Merrick to tell us stories about what guys used to do. He knows every story about everybody always. When it comes to hockey.
Oh, he would have one. He would have, but it'd be from some like obscure league or, some like deep in the forests of Quebec Hockey League where that happened.
I feel like he must have a time machine because it's not even just that he has that freakish memory because he knows as much about wrestling as he does about hockey. Nobody should know that much about two things. It's not just that he has a freakish memory. It's who would have time to accumulate all that information? He must have a time machine so he can go back and you know, kind of double up the hours somehow, like a club sandwich.
I think it's all his clean living. It buys him a couple extra hours a day.
You know, he is, whatever he's doing, he does it 151%.
Yeah, he's max power.
He is max power. All right, well, I feel like we're wrapping up. It's May the 4th. It's Star Wars Day. We didn't talk about Star Wars at all, but honestly, I'm in a bit of a holding pattern with Star Wars. They're gonna have to put out something to impress me, or I'm gonna move on, I think.
You'll come back. You always do.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, but it's gonna have to be something good. They're gonna need like a Rogue One to really get me excited, you know?
Oh yeah, get us another Rogue One. I'm here for it.
Yeah. It's also MCA Day because it was today in 2012 that Adam Yauch passed away. And I don't know about you. Were you a Beastie's guy? I don't think so.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. Oh, no. Love Beastie Boys. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's hard not to. Everybody kind of likes the Beastie Boys. Boy, they were huge in my life. God, to this day, even. I'm writing a special for Apple Music right now on Yauch. Yeah, so I'm just really knee deep in research on him. And God, what a fascinating guy. Like, if I could, you know, find a way to live half my life as dedicated as he lived his, God, what an experience that would be.
Yeah, you haven't done so bad, Bob. Maybe if you get the cookie deal done, you can say you guys are even. Goodbye, Bob.
Okay, bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.